From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of February, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom of TotalFarmMarketing.com. We'll hear from Google about its AI in workspace areas. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast too with Don Day on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. March corn for the day settled up 5 3/4 at 494.5. The May at 504 3/4, up 5. December up 2 3/4 at 468. March beans up 16 3/4, settlement price at 1075. And new crop November at 1073.5, up 10 1/4 cents. Naomi Bloom now joins us from TotalFarmMarketing.com. She's traveling today in Fargo, North Dakota. Is that right? Where are you and what are you doing?
Yes, Fargo, North Dakota. I'm at the Northern Ag Show. It's for corn and soybeans. So I'm here today as a guest speaker this afternoon to talk grain market outlook for, you know, what's in store potentially for the next year. So no pressure, right? All the shenanigans and happenings of the world right now, we'll have plenty to talk about.
There will be a lot to talk about. I bet big on their mind are tariffs as related to the Trump administration and China particularly. That had a huge impact across all of agriculture in 2018 related to soybean exports. However, North Dakota exports almost all of its soybean crop, and I'm sure they're worried. What can you tell them, or what are they asking? One of the two.
Yeah, you're so right about that. Soybeans in North Dakota head out the PNW, and so it's very critical for a lot of their demand for the farmers here that the tariff and trade wars maybe be averted. So, you know, good news yesterday from Canada and Mexico that the tariffs are put on hold for a month. They've agreed to some short-term negotiations in order to pause tariffs for a month. So the market liked that news, and prices were able to do an about face and turn higher just on that hope that the trade war is averted. Now, of course, China coming out this morning and responding to President Trump's tariffs with their own version of tariffs. Now, in my opinion, they seemed a little bit modest, just a little bit of a shove back to say, all right, you know, we're not going to just bend over and do whatever you want here, Mr. Trump. But they are willing, I think, in a sense, to negotiate. But with all of the trade and tariffs, the question is going to be, is there new demand coming out of it for ag commodities? So are we going to see, as these trade and tariff conversations continue for Mexico, Canada, China, are we going to see any hope for new ag demand for corn, soybeans, wheat, ethanol? That's what we're watching for. And with China specifically, you know, as Trump was leaving office in 2020, he had gotten them to agree to the phase one deal. And that's when China came in and bought a large amount of U.S. commodities at harvest time, of course, when it was cheaper. But now they haven't finished that phase one buying. So the question will be not answered probably today, but in the coming weeks and months, will China come back and finish that buying? Now, if they do, that's new demand for agricultural commodities that would be supportive for the market, but we just don't have any for sure news on that front yet. And that's why grain markets, as of today's close, just finishing up near resistance levels again, with March corn near the $5 handle, the soybeans getting closer to the $11 handle on that March contract. We are at a cliff looking out onto the horizon with an entire sea of unknown fundamentals ahead of us, some of which, if combined perfectly together, could be so friendly to the marketplace. And yet, if they don't occur, we could see the price pullback that we've been maybe expecting for a while. So stay tuned. So many things to come. And every day, of course, different, because you just don't know what is going to be coming out of the White House.
As a reminder, the phase one agreement was not met, as you said, by China. They purchased about 75% of what they were expected to purchase over a short timeline, which has expired at this point, the timeline that is. So there was 25% that they did not purchase. And they have not been in the marketplace in a large enough way to recoup all of the pre-18 purchases that they had been making. So the number of bushels that is being exported, actually, I think it's by a percentage, is not as large now as it was prior to that particular trade tiff between the United States and China. When you talk to producers, they're all in, willing to do their part. Are they ready and situated again to do that? Meaning, are they capable and willing to bear the brunt of a trade war, not only with China, but Mexico and Canada?
I think when you talk with producers about that from a patriotic standpoint, yeah, they're all in. Yet when you ask them, okay, how are you going to protect your marketing if prices fall apart, you get the deer in the headlights looking right at you. So there has not been the strategic happenings necessarily occurring at the level that potentially it should. You know, there is still hope for a version of trade war and tariff, but if things get down to the nitty-gritty and all of a sudden the trade wars just happen full on, we would be at risk of losing export demand. And that export demand is what had helped push the markets higher recently. So producers do need to be thinking about how can they be forward contracting? How can they be making cash sales, thinking about the next crop year, thinking about various potential put option strategies to protect just in case prices do fall apart lower. With this environment, you have to be ready for any scenario to unfold. And the news happens so fast that you can trade it maybe for 1 minute of a day, and it's probably at nighttime when we're all sleeping. So be ready for anything. Put marketing at the forefront of your plans as we finish out winter here. And while you're thinking about getting ready to go back to the fields for springtime, there's marketing to do first.
So your thought here is that really this market could turn either direction and move quickly, either up or down.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's the things that can make the market go higher. If we avert trade wars, if let's say China comes in and says, yeah, we're going to buy a little something, something, that would be supportive to prices. If the second crop corn in Brazil has poor weather on it, that's a reason why the corn price would need to work higher. If there's, of course, poor weather in the spring or summer in the United States as we go down the road, those are reasons why the grain markets could work higher from here. Yet, those are a very big sequence of events that need to occur to make the market go higher. And if they don't happen, then we might see just a simple correction lower of prices and then start to trade sideways. Or if the demand becomes lost because of a trade war, then we have a reason for prices to potentially fall significantly lower from here. And we know that Brazil has a record soybean crop. We know that global ending stocks of soybeans are at record levels. So we are really at this cusp of price movement going forward, where I can literally tell you four reasons why it could go higher from here, or four reasons why prices could go lower from here.
And finally, something to ask you about, because you are in the Western Corn Belt and in an area that raises a lot more beef cattle than we do here in Illinois and going to the east. On Friday, USDA released its cattle inventory numbers. What did that show and how did you view it?
Well, it just confirmed what we already suspected, that we're going to have another year of tight supplies of cattle in the country. I think in most capacities, the report in general was as expected by traders. And so because there wasn't anything over the top friendly on it, the market didn't have a reason to continue to run higher. And then instead, it was the news of the border opening with Mexico for cattle. That was a reason that we actually saw the market do some profit taking on Monday morning, which triggered technical selling, which triggered another washout for prices to the downside. And so with where cattle prices finished so far today, testing some major support levels near the 21-day moving average and a short-term uptrend, it'll be interesting to see how the market fares for the rest of the week. We'll be keeping an eye, of course, on box beef values. We'll be keeping an eye on weekly export sales, keeping an eye on cash markets, and also one eye constantly peeled to TV to know what is coming out of the White House.
Safe travels back to West Bend, Wisconsin. We appreciate you taking the time there in Fargo today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. If you've been listening to the Closing Market Report for very many years, you probably already understand that I really like technology, particularly if it improves my efficiency, whether that's at home or at work. I deploy technology. That's why when Google called and asked if I would do an interview with them about Google AI, particularly as it's related to Workspace, that's the suite of apps that you're probably already familiar with, like Gmail and Google Sheets and Google Docs, those sorts of things, but packaged together in a more office-like setting. I said, yes, absolutely. We could do that. I spoke with Google Workspace expert Harris Bieber earlier today. He started with Ace Sign Company out of Springfield as a local example of how Workspace and the AI inside of it was being used to improve their efficiency.
So last month, we announced that the best of Google AI is now included with Google Workspace. And Google Workspace is the apps that people know and love. It is Gmail, Google Docs, Google Sheets, and Google Slides. And it is helping small businesses really thrive in an ever-changing landscape and giving them the tools they need to take off all the tasks that come up throughout their day and let them focus on what they love and why they started their business. And what I mean by that is, for example, Ace Sign Co. has been in Illinois for 85 years. It's a generational family business. They make all these great neon signs. And before they build something with their hands, they have to design concepts for customers. That used to take them hours. Now, with just a few prompts and input from their customers, they can generate images and ideas in Google Slides in moments and share that with customers to get feedback before they land on a final design that they handcraft and build for the customers. So it's not about changing the work they do. It's about making it more efficient, higher quality output, and really helping them succeed and thrive so they could focus on what they love, which is building amazing signage for customers across the country.
So they would be using Google Gemini, which is the AI backend from Google within Workspace and Slides, and do what? Simply ask it a question explaining what they're looking for to see if the AI can build it for them?
AI is the best the more specific you are. And in Google Slides, we have image generation. So you could be very specific on, we're designing a sign for a diner called Mel's Diner. We want it to be red and yellow neon, have an interesting shape, and it'll come up with four or five different images. And then based on those images from the customer, they could give feedback. I don't like the shape. I want the font to be different. So really, it gives them an iterative design process that is really rapid and takes away some of the time-consuming work that they used to spend hours on. So for them, they're using image generation. For a small business like Cottrell Boats in Maine, who has been handcrafting boats for 40 years, and you'd say, what do craftsmen who build boats need AI for? Well, they have a website that attracts customers, and it's not so easy for them to describe what it is that they do. And they're using AI to help them draft newsletters and website descriptions that used to take them hours, and now they're doing in minutes. So it really spans the vast amount of use cases depending on the business, whether that's smart replies in email and helping them summarize an email thread, reply to customers, build a customer proposal, do inventory reports or tracking in Google Sheets. It really depends on what the business needs are. And then Gemini and AI is there to help them get what they need done in a more efficient way so they could focus on what they love.
Do you see this as an iteration in the way work is done? Or is it more akin to the word processor and that transition?
I would say it's a leap forward. And there's two things that AI is great at. You started a business as a baker because you love baking goods. You might not be a great marketer, or you might have no finance background. AI is there to help you do those tasks that you either don't have time to do or might not know how to do. And when you're a small business, a lot of times every job falls on your head, right? So if you're not doing it, it's not getting done. And now you have this tool that enables you to get all the things that need to get done so you could focus on the things that you want to do and love doing.
So this is a place where Google and Workspace is thinking that the businesses are small enough that they may or may not be using, for instance, a graphic artist, or they may or may not be using a communications specialist, and they're doing all of this in-house, and it enhances what their capabilities are.
Absolutely. Or that might be your skill set, and it's letting the amount of work you could do and the quality of your work up level, right? I have to write proposals all the time, and I might have a great idea in my head, and I could spend 4 hours drafting that, iterating it. But if I just put the idea and prompt it and ask Gemini to help me write a draft proposal or help me write a strategy doc, it'll give me a version in a few minutes that might be 80% there, and then I'm refining it. So this is work I know how to do. I'm good at doing it, but it's really time consuming, and now it makes me much more efficient and at getting more done.
Can I ask a question related, because I work within the agricultural realm, to that area, whether it be within the spreadsheets that would be used for tax purposes and or in the procurement area to track all kinds of things that are inputs on the farm? Do you have examples, or can you think of examples that might be in those areas?
Yeah, I can tell you a great example.
FYI, they did not know I was going to ask that question.
Ancillary, but related. So there's a great company in Oregon called Jacobson Salt. They make sea salt from seawater. Now, seawater is varying at all different times. And the way they explain this, salinity, which is the amount of salt in the water, could vary differently. But they're shipping a product to consumers that they want to be consistent. So the amount of boil time they use depends on the salinity in the water. And they're using Google Sheets to track the different salinity, estimate the boil time. So when they ship a product, the customers get a product that tastes the same, has the same high quality at all times, right? And then there's also farmers in North Dakota that make pasta, and they're using grain, and they want to use it to track all their inventory and the shipment. So they're using it from both raw goods supplies and inventory, or how do they ship products and what is selling the most. So it can be used for lots of different things. Anything that your business needs, the thing I would encourage small businesses to do is just ask. Get started, and the more you use it, the more you'll learn. And it is great at so many things that you might not realize.
How do you go about that?
So the best way to do it is, last month we announced that Google Workspace now includes the best of AI in all its business plans. So there's no add-on, there's no extra charge. Google Workspace is Gmail, Google Docs, Google Drive, Sheets. And if you go just look up Google Workspace on Google, you'll come to the page and you could sign up for a free trial and you could start trying it. And the more you use it, the better you'll get at it, and you'll see real value today, not tomorrow, not in the distant future. You could start getting value today if you just start using it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Harris Bieber is a Google Workspace specialist. I spoke with him earlier today about Gemini, or Google's AI, and the Workspace suite. Don Day from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, now joins us to discuss the agricultural weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet. He is driving across the great state of Colorado at the moment. Is that right, Don?
Yep, I'm along Interstate 70 out on the eastern Colorado Plain.
And why are you in that area?
Well, you know, it is the farm and ranch show season, and I was at a no-till conference, one they've had for quite a while there in Burlington, Colorado. Well attended. Well over a couple hundred people I saw this morning.
Interesting. I suppose they wanted to know if the weather was going to be dry this coming season and what things would look like for their wheat crop as it comes out of dormancy. What kind of information were you able to provide to them?
Well, you know, we've had some pretty dry weather in that part of the country here, really, for most of the winter season so far. So they're really interested in the spring and summer. And I conveyed to them that I was optimistic that winter wheat country in the southwest areas are going to have a decent spring and a good summer from what I'm seeing.
And what do you base that upon?
I base that upon the fact that La Nina has reached its peak strength and is beginning to fade. And at least in the western high plains, if there's a La Nina in place, that's a very dry signal. And with that signal going away, the prospects for more wet spring in that part of the U.S. looks much, much better.
And if I remember correctly, Don, while La Nina doesn't correlate particularly well in the Midwest, especially the further east you go in the Corn Belt, there is a much better correlation in the western growing regions. Is that correct?
That is correct. As you go further east, there's still some impacts depending on the intensity of the La Nina, but you start to get into that part of the country where the Gulf, whatever you want to call it, Mexico or America, has more of an influence.
What's the weather forecast short-term look like for us here in the United States?
Well, a lot of people across a lot of the U.S. enjoying a thaw started here over the past week or so, and that warmer temperature regime is going to last a little bit longer. We're going to see some more snow across the northern part of the U.S., but that Arctic air is locked up north for a while longer. Beginning late this weekend, though, into next week, the thaw is over, and much colder Canadian air will overspread a lot of the lower 48. It may not necessarily come with a lot of precipitation, but some. So it's been a nice little interlude of warmer temperatures, spring-like in some areas, but it's not necessarily an indication that winter's over. Far from it. As we go into next week and beyond, it's a colder pattern that's likely to evolve.
Now turn your attention to South America. Take us through the growing regions of concern and not of concern, in your opinion.
Well, the southern and southeastern growing areas of Brazil and some of the northern areas of Argentina, over the last few weeks, they've been drier than average. And it's starting to make some impacts, things getting a little bit dry, especially the far southern states. There's been a bit more rain the more north and west you go into Brazil. It's getting a little bit warmer as well. So there's been a dry trend in some of the key growing areas. I wouldn't call it a drought or a long spell of severe dryness, but certainly the last month or so we've seen precipitation taper off.
Hey, thank you much, Don.
Thanks for having me.
Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Do visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org, where today you'll find information on how to register for the upcoming Tuesday, March 4th, All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We're in our 35th year of this event. It's longstanding, and if you've not been before, please join us. If you've been before, come again. The cost is just $40. The Farm Doc team will be on stage, along with the bulk of the analysts that you hear on WILL AM 580's daily programs. Be sure to join us at the Beef House on Tuesday, March the 4th. Don't wait. Register today at willag.org. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.